Welcome to the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am Nate Schreiber, and as always, with my co-host, Alex Pollinger.
Hey, Nate. How do you keep the Bills out of your backyard?
Run the football. I don't know. What's the answer to this one?
The answer is to put an end zone in it.
Put an end zone. Hey, that's a great one. That is a great one. Because this, I think the Bills, if I'm thinking correctly, the Bills have... Is it 6 offensive touchdowns in 7 games? Is that right?
It's not good, whatever it is. Todd Gurley has a lot more himself.
Yeah, I can think. I mean, because Josh Allen has 3 running touchdowns, and he's got 2 passing touchdowns, and Peterman's got 1. Yeah, 6 touchdowns this season.
You know what? Let's set an over-under on touchdowns for the season. Is 18.5 too high?
I don't think it's necessarily high enough. I was actually going to look. I'm curious to see, first of all, if I was right with that. I might be missing one touchdown. They might have 7. But I still think the last, 4 or 5 games of the season, they're going to get into some sort of a better rhythm on offense. I mean, it can't get much worse, right? So I would hope that they can at least have a couple games with multiple touchdowns, because that would sure be nice. The Bills quarterbacks have 3 passing touchdowns to 12 interceptions, so they are last in the league in both of those categories. and the Bills have 4 running touchdowns. Wait, LeSean McCoy has 1. It's Ivory. But there's 7 touchdowns in 7 games. So I think... If we said 19.5 touchdowns for over-under, I would be hesitant to go with the over, actually. I think 19.5 is where I'd set that.
That's just, it speaks volumes to how bad this offense is. And let's not forget, this is the offense they chose. They had money to spend in free agency. They chose to spend it on the defense. That's fine. The defense was awful last game. They've been pretty good the 4 or 5 games before that. I don't know. I mean, if there's any positive to take out of this game, it's that the offense was able to move the ball down the field. I don't want to say it will, but consistently. And that's something we haven't seen before. And in the end, it was just awful turnovers that killed the Bills. I mean, the turning point in the game was when Charles Clay fumbled. I think it was inside the Colts 30 in a 6-0 game. I mean, even if they get a field goal out of that, I don't know. And they still would have got their ass kicked. That's the bottom line. But it certainly would have been a much different game if they score on that drive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think, now, it is tough to say this with a quarterback that turned the ball over 4 times in a game. But for the first time, I think, this season, we saw a quarterback who consistently looked like a professional quarterback. He had some throws that were terrible, right? He had some plays that were terrible, but he had, throughout the day, he had many periods where he looked like a professional quarterback and making professional throws. And I think that's something I hope that Josh Allen can learn from, because Derek Anderson had, 10 days, not even, to learn the offense. And his first throw of the game, even, he got rushed in the pocket, got hit as he threw, and laid the ball in there, and he did that. He stayed calm and relaxed in the pocket multiple times throughout the day, and I think if I'm trying to take something positive away from that, that's about as positive as I can get with the offense from Sunday.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good summary, Nate. I mean, Derek Anderson, he got the ball out quick. He was decisive. I mean, it resulted in turnovers sometimes, but I think that's the biggest takeaway, is you see what a professional quarterback looks like even when they don't have the physical skill set, just of raw talent like Josh Allen. You see, like, the cognitive abilities there, just of a guy that's been in the league forever. He knows how to read a defense. He knows how to get the ball out quick to protect himself so he's not getting drilled. And that's something that Josh Allen has to learn from Derek Anderson, is how to get that ball out quick, how to try to understand what a defense is trying to do to him, try to confuse him with all these bluffs and different looks pre-snap. And I think if Josh Allen can learn those things, he'll be a decent quarterback. Because, I mean, if Derek Anderson can do it, I mean, he by no means has any raw ability compared to Josh Allen.
Yeah, I mean, I would completely agree. And this is a game that I think in the grand scheme of things, when we look back, and the thing that we're going to remember most about this game is it was the only 37-5 game in NFL history. I mean, there's not much more to remember from this. I mean, I guess Kelvin Benjamin looked like a wide receiver for the first time all season. I guess we could take that away from it. I thought he played very well. The running backs, because the offensive line gave them negative help, and both Marcus Murphy and Chris Ivory looked decent. This was by far, in my opinion, the worst game for the offensive line all season, especially for Russell Bodine. Like, Russell Bodine, I can't even think of the right word to describe his performance in that game, so I'm not even gonna try. I mean, he was basically in Derek Anderson's lap the entire game, because whoever was lined up across from him was just pushing him back at will. And that was a problem across, like, throughout the offensive line, but Bodine was by far the worst guy of the five.
Yeah, Nate, we've kind of, I don't want to say sung the praises, but we've told you pretty much all season that the offensive line has been solid, not great, but not terrible. And that's all they needed to be for this team to have a chance. This was the first game. I agree that they weren't good. And, you know, they were okay in pass protection. I guess it was passable. Definitely wasn't good. But they were awful in the run game. And like you said, Russell Bodine was just terrible. He was getting blown completely back, straight into the quarterback. You can't have that happen with your center. And, you know, there was 4 years of tape of him doing that for Cincinnati to, you know, kind of discourage you from making him your starting center. And I don't know, I just don't get it. Because not very rarely does a passable starting center, you know, does a team let him go off of his rookie contract. And that was the first indication. I'm pretty sure I said that back when they signed him, that teams don't let starting centers go. It's because he's not a starting center.
Yeah, I would agree. And the problem was not only on the offensive side of the ball up front, but it was also on the defensive side of the ball up front. I mean, the interior defensive line, with the exception, I think, of Star Lotulelei, who won most of his reps in the game. I mean, but no one else interior, whether it was Kyle Williams, Harrison Phillips, Jordan Phillips, Lorenzo Alexander, they just weren't winning inside. And that was really the first time since maybe the first half of the Chargers game that has happened. Because even against the Packers, they still won up front for much of the day. The offense just couldn't even get the ball past midfield in that game. So I think this is not something we're going to, I think, expect to see the rest of the year. It's really just a down day on both sides of the ball. And yes, the Bills are bad. Yes, we can't expect them to win too many games. But are we going to see a bunch more 37-5s? Probably not.
Yeah, and Nate, this is a game that we both picked the Bills to win. It was a good spot for them to win. You know, the Colts were a team that I picked to win the AFC South, and quite frankly, they're not out of it at 2-5. I mean, that division's awful. And, you know, if they can win a few games in division, they're looking at sneaking into the playoffs as an 8-8, 9-7 division winner, because they're not terrible. I mean, they have a very good quarterback. That's no secret. Andrew Luck has been a good quarterback for a while, despite that hiatus with the injury for almost 2 years. But I don't know, there's just not a ton of talent on that Colts team, but Luck finds a way to keep them in games. And I don't know, it's just embarrassing for the Bills to get pounded by a team like that. And especially, like you said, on the defensive side of the ball, the D tackles got blown off the ball. Milano and Edmonds, that was their worst game by far. I mean, there were still flashes of potential and brilliance there, but for the most part, Luck was just manipulating them all over the field. And they're really struggling with pass catching running backs. I've noticed that. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at any numbers to back that up. That's just something I've noticed, especially in the Chargers game and the Colts game. Those two rookie linebackers kind of struggle picking up the, you know, pass catching backs.
Yeah, I mean, the touchdown catch by Marlon Mack was Matt Milano just either. I couldn't tell, even from how many times I watched that play, whether or not he guessed or whether he thought he saw something he saw from the film or whatever, but he just, like, went the wrong way at the snap, and Marlon Mack had a down that, and that time. I'm just not quite sure what was going on there. But I'm not that worried about those linebackers. I mean, we've seen their potential, and we've seen them flash, and they're both really young kids that are going to continue to get better. And I don't think we need to worry about them, you know, too much. And like I said before, if we're trying to take any kind of positives out of this game, Kelvin Benjamin looked decent, looked like a wide receiver. The running backs both held their own, and Tre'Davious White did his job, which you can kind of expect. I really think outside of Tre'Davious White, the running backs, and Benjamin, maybe John Miller, no one else really played that well.
Yeah, that's pretty much all you can take away. The first thing I mentioned, they did move the ball, and that goes along with Benjamin and the running backs playing well. I agree. I think John Miller is going to earn himself a nice extension because he's played really well. That's a guy we identified in the preseason, you know, during training camp, that, hey, this could be like the comeback player of the year for the Bills after he got benched last year. And he's answered the call. He's played really well, and I've been impressed with him. This was probably one of his weaker games, but it's like you said, Nate, he was the best player on the offensive line last game.
Oh, yeah, that there's no questioning that. Even though it may have been one of his weaker games, compared to everyone else, he was all pro. I mean, so that's for certain. I mean, there was no one else that had a good game. But, hey, it's 1 week, and it's a long season. And I think at this point, Bills fans, we're mostly hoping that Josh Allen comes back as soon as possible and that the Bills can, you know, survive this season without the locker room falling apart and with the process still intact. Because I think at this point, we can kind of all lay to rest any real hopes of the Bills return to the playoffs for the second straight season, because I would put that the chances of that at like 5% at this point, maybe not even 5%. And it basically is going to require like Tom Brady getting kidnapped. So I think we're at this point, that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah. I mean, the playoff hopes went out the window as soon as Peterman threw that pick six to Jonathan Joseph against the Texans in week six, because if they win that game and go to 3-3, they're still in the hunt at 3-4. They probably lose the next one, but like we said all season, that back half of the schedule is real soft. They have a lot of home games. I still think they're going to win six, maybe seven games, and that's because the defense is good, despite what we saw against Indianapolis. And I don't know. It's just there's too much talent on the defensive side of the ball for them to go 2-14, 3-13. They're not going to compete with the Raiders and the Cardinals for the first pick. You know, I think they're going to be more in the 4-8 range when it comes to the 2019 draft.
I mean, I can think of four teams pretty easily that, in my opinion, are clearly worse than the Bills, and those are the 49ers, the Raiders, the Cardinals, and the Giants. So I think those four teams are pretty clearly worse overall than the Bills, because they all have better offenses than the Bills, with the exception of maybe the Cardinals. But on the defensive side of the ball, there's not even a comparison. And I think that's where, like you said, this Bills team is going to find a few wins that many other teams with that kind of an offense probably wouldn't be able to find in an NFL game.
All right. So, I mean, to be honest with you, I turned this game off at halftime, and I felt damn good about it, to be honest with you. I watched Red Zone the rest of the day, and, you know, I don't feel like I missed much, and I saw all I needed to see from that game in the first half. So, Nate, I think we don't really need to beat a dead horse with analyzing this 37-5 game. You said it best. That's the only thing we're going to remember, is that it's the only game in NFL history to end at 37-5. So we'll move on to a listener question we got last week. So Joe in Boston asked us, well, he sent us his opinion on that the AFC is better than the NFC right now. And that was before last week's game. So that's an important qualifier here. And Joe gave a lot of reasons why he thinks this is so. And I think it's a pretty compelling case, Nate. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that I've thought about this a lot since I saw this email, and I think I would agree generally that the AFC top to bottom, or the top of the AFC is better than the top of the NFC. However, I don't really think that top to bottom it's necessarily better, because I think the two worst divisions in the NFL are still clearly in the AFC. And while
those being what two divisions?
The AFC South and the AFC East, I think are clearly the two worst divisions in football still. Now, the AFC has also the best division in football, which is the AFC North, but they also have the two worst. So I think that the top of the AFC is better, yes, than the top of the NFC, but top to bottom, I still struggle to say that the AFC is definitely better overall than the NFC.
Yeah, I would argue that the NFC West is probably in the conversation for worst division. It kind of mirrors the AFC East. The Rams are really good. The Patriots are really good. Every other team in that division is absolute crap. I'd say the NFC North makes a pretty good case to be the best division as well. I mean, it might not show it record-wise. The Bears are really good, and they're coming along. The Lions have a great offense, and it looks like they might be okay. And then, obviously, the Packers and Vikings are, you know, fringe Super Bowl contenders at this point. But I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence of saying the AFC is better than the NFC. I definitely agree. The depth at the top of the conference is probably a bit better on the AFC side. But I think the bottom really falls out, like you said, Nate. Obviously, we have the Rams, who are really good in the NFC. The Vikings kind of were a disappointment to start. I didn't think the Eagles were going to be that great, despite them being the defending Super Bowl champions. And that division's a dumpster fire as well, the NFC East. But I think New Orleans is a really, really good team. And that's where I think you can make the argument that the AFC and NFC are about the same, because you have the Rams, Saints, Packers, Vikings. And then when you go to the AFC side, you have Chiefs, Patriots, the Ravens are pretty good. And the Chargers, I almost forgot about the Chargers. So I'd say the top four teams are about equal.
Yeah, I mean, the Ravens probably, to this point, have the best defense in the entire NFL. Their offense is always going to be, I don't want to say a struggle, but that's there's going to be questions on the offensive side of the ball. But yeah, I mean, I do think that the AFC is top heavy versus the NFC. But if you're trying to go out here and say, you know, the one point he makes here that set this up, like you said before, this email was before the games were played last week. But he talks about like traditional NFC powerhouses like Seattle, the Eagles, and the Falcons are struggling, and also the Packers. And he makes a really good point, which is if you take away Aaron Rodgers being amazing, they're one of the worst teams, which I think I will certainly agree with that. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is just ridiculous, and he makes that team so much better than it should be. But I think that all three of those NFC teams that he mentioned as traditional powerhouses that are struggling are going to end up being okay going forward. I think the Falcons are going to compete for a playoff spot. I think the Eagles are also going to get themselves back in that mix. I think I don't think the Seahawks will necessarily do that, but I mean that NFC South is going to be a battle. I mean, like you said, the Saints are really good. This is one of the best teams I've had in a while, and it's the best Drew Brees has looked maybe ever. But I mean, there are three teams in the NFC that I would say for most teams, you know, a free win. Like, you take a good team, a top 10, 12 team in the NFL, and there's three teams in the NFC that I would say, okay, they'll beat them almost every time. In the AFC, can I find three teams that I think they'll beat every single time? Maybe. But I don't know if I can or not. And that's another thing I'm thinking about as I sit here.
Yeah, there's definitely – you have the Raiders, obviously, who might not win a game the rest of the year because it sounds like that locker room is just bailing on John Gruden, and rightfully so. It seems like he's trying to get fired and make off with that guaranteed $100 million he's got. the Bills' defense is too good to be a guaranteed win, unless you're the Patriots. And the Bills did beat the Vikings. Granted, I think they probably lose that game like 85 times out of 100, but they dominated that day. I'm struggling to find another team that's really that beatable. So I don't know, maybe top to bottom, the AFC is a touch better. I think it's pretty close. And I don't know, maybe I'm being blinded by the fact that we're answering this question after seeing last week's game.
Before last week's games, I would have probably leaned more towards agreeing. But after the Falcons, so the Falcons is the team. I picked the Falcons to win the Super Bowl before the season started. They struggled out of the gate, right? They started 1-4. They've won two games in a row. One of them is against the Giants, which doesn't really count. The Giants are really, really bad. But, I mean, they're 2-1 in their division. And I think they have – they're in a spot where if they can – they have to go to New Orleans and beat the Saints. If they can do that, though, I mean, they're right there. And they've played a pretty tough schedule. Their losses, Eagles, Saints, Bengals, Steelers, none of those – none of those are bad. Those are all pretty good football teams. It's the defending Super Bowl champions, and then the team that's winning your division, and then two teams in the AFC North that first place, second place, AFC North. I mean, they're better than their record.
Yeah, and they've also been completely ravaged by injuries on defense. I mean, they lost Deion Jones, Keanu Neal, Ricardo Allen. Grady Jarrett missed a couple of games, so they pretty much did. They lose another starter on defense, Nate? I think I'm missing one, but I know they lost like four of their top five players on defense. You know, the lone one remaining is Desmond Trufant.
Yeah, and they also lost their starting guard Brandon Fusco to a season-ending injury against the win over the Giants. I'm trying to think: Keanu Neal, Ricardo Allen, Deion Jones. Devontae Freeman is on injured reserve. Levitre is out for the season with a triceps injury. So both starting guards are out for the season with injury. I mean, like you said, they are just ravaged by injuries.
Yeah, and you know, another team, like we mentioned earlier in the pod, the Colts have been ravaged by injuries as well. I mean, what did we say in the preview? They had 12 guys on the injury report and a crap ton more that are on IR already. And I don't know. You have to wonder how much better the Colts would be record-wise if they hadn't lost a ton of guys to injury or had them missing for key games. They went into New England with absolutely no one to catch the ball. So I'm curious to see what that team does going forward. That AFC South is a dumpster fire. And, Nate, we'll have to... I think next week we should go back to our preseason predictions as kind of like a halfway point to check up on things. I'm feeling pretty good about my Jaguars finishing last in the AFC South prediction.
Yeah, I mean, so the Jaguars, so one thing, the Colts, first to go on your Colts point, the Colts have like the easiest schedule in the NFL the rest of the season. I'm looking at it right now. They're going to be underdogs once, maybe twice the rest of the season. It is just a pretty easy schedule. They've played one division game so far. One.
Yeah, that's crazy at this
point. So they have a pretty easy schedule the rest of the way. And the Jaguars, who are 3-4, and looking at the rest of their schedule, they're three of their next four games and four of their next, so their next four games are Eagles at Indianapolis against the Steelers. And then in Buffalo, they could easily lose all four of those. And then your prediction's probably right anyway. But even if they don't, they still have to play the Colts twice. They have to play the Texans again. They play the Redskins, Steelers, the Eagles. Not necessarily an easy schedule to close the season on. Nothing compared to what Indianapolis has. And with the quarterback situation in Jacksonville, which with Blake Bortles and Cody Kessler and who the heck knows what's going on there, They're just in rough shape.
I'm pretty confident that they could put Derek Anderson in at quarterback in Jacksonville, and they would be much better than 3-4 than they are with Blake Bortles. It's just Blake Bortles is so bad. There aren't enough adjectives to describe how bad Blake Bortles is as an NFL quarterback. Yeah, he puts up good fantasy numbers because he gets a ton of garbage time yards and touchdowns and throws four picks along the way of doing it. I really don't get why they signed him to a 3-year extension at the end of last season. You could have just let him go. They could have signed Teddy Bridgewater. They could have signed anyone, and they would have been better than Blake Bortles. I don't know. It just, it's really, really just, I don't understand why he's still a starter for the Jaguars or anyone in this league. And Kaepernick's out of the league. I mean, they could be, I don't know, 4-5-2 with Kaepernick or any other quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, too, that one of those, I mean, Bortles, what he against the Patriots week two, he threw for 380 yards and 4 touchdowns to look like the MVP of the league. He does that every once in a while, and that's what makes a team like Jacksonville give him a 3-year extension. Now, one thing that is helpful to the Jaguars about the extension is it's pretty team-friendly, and I think they can pretty easily get out of it after this season. If I've read about it correctly, they can – basically, the entire guarantee is this season. Let me see. 3-year contract extension. Oh, no, he's around for one more season after this. They can cut – so – they have to keep him for one more year. So they kind of locked themselves in. I mean, it's not for a super long time, but long enough.
Yeah, so I want to steer back towards Joe's original point. We haven't talked much about the Chargers, and I think, was that a team we both had in the Super Bowl this year, Nate?
Yeah, so I had the Falcons beating the Chargers in the Super Bowl, and I think you had, I was actually going to pull it up, because I had it saved. We can go through it this next week, like you said, all the way through. But
yeah, I think I had the Packers over the Chargers, but the Chargers, I think Joe makes a good point because he talks about them being a very good team in the AFC that's kind of underrated compared to the NFC that doesn't have many teams with good records, and the teams that are kind of in that class of records with the Chargers prior to last week. The Chargers are way better than teams like the Bears and the Redskins, and I think Joe's absolutely right about that. And they don't even have Joey Bosa back yet, and their defense goes from, you know, average to above average to really good once they get Joey Bosa. I mean, that's a guy that is a game changer, and I think it also makes Melvin Ingram better as a pass rusher when Joey Bosa's in there. So look for the Chargers to make more of a run than they already have. I think did they lose their first two or two of their first three? I think they lost to the Rams and the Chiefs, the two best teams in the league. So the Chargers are sneakily very, very good.
Yeah, so let me ask you this. Can you name 5 teams in the NFL right now that are better than the Chargers? Because I was thinking about this as you were just talking there. And I'm thinking, okay, the Rams, the Chiefs, the Patriots, the Saints. Is there anyone else that's definitely better than the Chargers?
And Nate, I want to make a point here. I don't even know if the Patriots are better than the Chargers as a team.
No, probably not. But the Patriots, I mean, the Patriots have beaten the Chiefs. The Chargers have lost to the good teams. They've beaten the teams supposed to beat. They've lost to the good teams. The Patriots, yeah, they got smacked by the Jaguars, but they do that every year. And they did just beat Pat Mahomes for the first time. I think for right now, I would put the Patriots out of the Chargers, but I do agree. They're not definitely better.
Yeah, they're about, I think we're splitting hairs at this point in the season. But in terms of just overall roster, I think the Chargers are a better team, especially defensively. I don't get how New England, I think they're like 3rd in pressure rate when they only rush 4, which I don't understand because Le Batard show made this a poll yesterday. How many Patriots defensive linemen can you name? And I don't think I can name one. Is Van Noy a defensive lineman or is that a linebacker? I don't even know.
I think he's a linebacker. I don't think so. That's Bill Belichick, though. Bill Belichick is a defensive genius, and he tends to have pretty good defenses no matter who is on them.
Yeah, I mean, he when it comes to getting something out of anyone, that's the best guy in the NFL for it. And it sucks as Bills fans to have to watch that, you know, for like the 20th straight season, but that's the world we live in. And I don't know. So Nate, let's touch, before we wrap this up, let's touch on Joe's one other point. He kind of gave his like top three power rankings here before last week. So let's not take any last week's games into account here. He has the Rams at one, Patriots at two, Chiefs at three. And I know you didn't agree with the Patriots over the Chiefs before last week's game. Do you still think so?
I still think I actually would put Kansas. I still think Kansas City is above New England, and I can see a world where they're ranked number one by some people over the Rams as well. I think Mahomes has been that impressive this season. That offense, when it's firing all cylinders, is almost unstoppable. I mean, I could see that being the case, but I still think yes that the Chiefs. I would put the Chiefs ahead of the Patriots, even though yes the Patriots beat the Chiefs. I know the whole thing. Oh, they're better. They beat them. I think if they played them 10 times, the Chiefs are winning at least 6 of those games.
Yeah, I think that's right, Nate. I understand making the argument for the Patriots over the Chiefs, and it's splitting hairs, like you said. Like they'd probably win 6 games out of 10, which I don't know if you expand that to a larger sample size, it might even be closer to like 55-45. So regardless, it's close. It's splitting hairs, I think. But I don't know. I'm excited for that Rams Chiefs game on November 19th on Monday Night Football. I don't know if it'll be as much of a shootout as people think, because the Chiefs defense is getting a touch better. I think they get Sorensen, one of their safeties, back off of IR soon, and the Rams are going to get a little bit healthier on defense. So I'm intrigued to see what that game looks like. Like, because football is so strange that it's a small sample size season with only 16 games, in a game like Chiefs-Patriots or Chiefs-Rams, we automatically put the winning team up above the other one in power rankings. I'm not sure that's entirely accurate, because like you said, the probabilities, the Chiefs probably beat them more times than not. So I don't know. I'm excited to see that Rams Chiefs game, but I don't know if we can say definitively that the winner is better than the other one.
No, I think the an extra factor with that game that makes it even less so. I think that game will be a shootout. I think that because they're playing it in Mexico at the Azteca, they're playing it those defenders are not going to be able to breathe in the second half. They're going to be sucking wind. And I just can't see it not being a high-scoring game. But a lot of that is because that game is being played in Mexico.
Yeah, I forgot about that, but Mexico City is at really high altitude, so that will be interesting. But regardless, I think Joe gave us a pretty good topic this week. And after talking through it, I tend to agree that top to bottom, the AFC is better, even though the top is probably about equal with the top four teams in each conference. But like you said, you can name three teams that probably lose to almost everyone in the league on the NFC side. And you don't really have that on the AFC side, Nate. So I think Joe makes a good case that the AFC is better than the NFC right now. I do think we'll see the Saints rise, up in kind of everyone's view of top NFL teams. But I think the Chargers do as well. But I do think the Packers and Vikings will also, kind of become Super Bowl contenders as the season goes on. And that's not because the Packers are good. It's because they have the best quarterback in the world in the history of the league.
Yeah, I mean, if Rodgers gets them into the playoffs, he's a threat to win the Super Bowl every single time. And that division is tight enough that there's a very good chance that the winner of that division is only wins 9 games. I mean, you could see a 9-7-1 or a 9-6-1 team in the playoffs. I think it's likely that we see a 9-6-1 team in the playoffs because the division, Vikings and Packers, both have a tie. So,
yeah, that will be interesting. I'm going to be really upset as a football fan and on behalf of Aaron Rodgers if that team doesn't make the playoffs, because he's just so good. And we've seen him do it before where he can just lead a team on the road 3 straight games and get to the Super Bowl, or have his team blow it for him with a lead in the NFC title game.
If he gets this team to the playoffs with his schedule, I mean, he's got against the Rams in Los Angeles, at New England, home against the Dolphins, he should win that one, in Seattle, in Minnesota. That's the next 5 games. If he wins 3 of those, I mean, I don't see how they don't make the playoffs, but if he winning 3 of those will be difficult, I think, but his Aaron Rodgers, if anyone can do it, if anyone can get a team to the playoffs with that kind of a schedule, it is Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, and they just had their bye week in week 7. And I think the brace is coming off this week, and his knee should be feeling better because I believe it was a pretty severe MCL sprain. Typically, those are 2 to 4 weeks, but because he had to practice on it so much and play without a bye, it didn't really heal all that much. So I think 2 weeks off, we're going to start to see Aaron Rodgers close to, you know, full mobility. And we saw it on that game-winning drive against the 49ers in week six where he scrambled for 21 yards and looked pretty quick. He shuffled around in the pocket like himself. I think we're going to see even better Aaron Rodgers the rest of the season, and I think he's going to fulfill my MVP prediction.
Yeah, I mean, he is, because of what they ask him to do and how good he is, I mean, he's clearly the best quarterback in the league right now. I think if he can get them to the playoffs, if the Packers make the playoffs, it's going to be mostly because of Aaron Rodgers. And at that point, even if Mahomes has more touchdowns or more yards, I still think Rodgers is the most valuable player to his team. Not necessarily the outstanding in terms of stats or anything like that, because if Mahomes stays on his current pace, he'll probably win MVP because it's more of a stat-based thing, but that's just kind of how the MVP award has worked in every league, every sports league the last 15, 20 years, and that's a whole nother argument.
Yeah, there's always kind of a blurred line between most outstanding player and most valuable player of how voters define it and how they cast their vote based on it. I'm not entirely sure that Rodgers won't end up being the leader in touchdowns and passing yards. Nate, I'm pulling up his stats right now. He's thrown for a lot of yards. You know, the lowest he's had in a game is 265. He had two games over 400 in a row. He's got 4, 6, 7, 10, 12 touchdowns in 6 games. I think we'll see that go up. I think he'll get up closer towards 40 touchdowns and, you know, maybe a handful of picks. So I don't know.
He's actually averaging more yards per game than Mahomes by about 15. I mean, the touchdown thing is, what can he do? But yeah, I could see it. I guess I could see that happening. I mean, if you're looking at all the big time, I mean, Mahomes has more touchdowns, but he's also thrown the ball more. So, I mean, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that shakes. Oh, he's thrown the ball 3 last time, so that's not the wrong number. But yeah, I did not realize Rodgers had that many more yards than Mahomes. He doesn't have more yards, that many yards per game than Mahomes, because he has played one less game.
Right, yeah. And I do think we're going to see some regression towards the mean in both camps there. The Chiefs are like at a historic pace right now. I don't think they're going to be able to keep that pace for a full 16-game season. Obviously, that offense is really good, and they're still going to probably challenge some records. But I don't know if they're going to stay on that hot of a pace. And in terms of touchdowns, I think that's going to regress towards the mean with Aaron Rodgers, too, now that he's getting, you know, healthier. He had Cobb and Allison out, you know, for at least 2 or 3 games there. So he's going to have 2 of his starting wide receivers back. Not that I think those guys are very good. I think Rodgers makes them better. I will take back saying that Rodgers has never had good receivers in his career. I think Davante Adams is really good. You know, not just because Rodgers makes him great. I think Adams is a solid receiver.
Yeah, I mean, that, I think if you have to go back all the way to his 2011 team, but that team probably had more decent receivers than any of the teams he's really played for in his career. That 2011 team, I'm trying to, so it was Jordy Nelson, it was Greg Jennings, and Donald Driver. And I think they all had at least 100 targets and 100 targets and 60 catches for all 3 of them. And plus he had JerMichael Finley and James Jones, who added 55 and 38 catches respectively. So that was probably the best receiving group. And then Cobb was a rookie that year as well. So Cobb didn't have a ton of targets. That's probably his best overall receiving group he's had in his career. And that also happened to be the year where he threw for 45 touchdowns. So,
yeah, and I think that was Jennings and Driver at the end of their careers, too. So it wasn't even like their prime. And my scalding hot take is always that Jordy Nelson was never any good. It was just Rodgers making him look good. I'm pretty sure he was consistently near the top of the league in drops. I remember one against the Bills. I think it was in that 2014 season where he was wide open over the top of the defense, no one around him, the ball just bounces off his hands. That's one play, but I'm pretty sure he consistently ranked as one of the leaders in drops. But
yeah,
scalding hot take
Jordy
aside.
Nelson's career with Aaron Rodgers, he had for his games since he became a full-time starting receiver in Green Bay, he went 1,200, 1,300, 1,500, 1,300, 1,300, and doubled the touchdowns for those 5 years. And then he goes to Oakland. Yes, he's 33 years old, and this year is 22 catches for 323 in six games. So it is, the Aaron Rodgers effect is real.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know we've kind of rambled for a little bit here about how great Rodgers is. We tend to do that every week when we get into this segment. I do want to touch on one more thing before we close this out, Nate, and that's Pat Shurmur's decision to go for two on that play where it would have made it a 6-point game if they converted and kept it an 8-point game if they didn't. And I see a lot of people saying, oh, just kick the two extra points. Trust the math, people. I mean, if you look at the probability charts of how that works out, 50% of the time, you win that game in regulation because you went for two in that scenario.
Yep. And I mean, we have to think about what you're essentially saying. Okay, we're going to give ourselves a 50-50 shot to even have a chance to win the game by kicking an extra point. Right? Just to tie
yeah.
the game. That's essentially what you're saying. We're saying we're okay with having a 50-50 chance of even having a chance to win the game.
It's baffling to me how people don't understand probabilities and go by old football guy, trust your gut feeling. And the analytics guys are proving more and more that that's wrong. And Doug Peterson, I'm pretty sure, I can't remember if it was this year or last year, did the same thing and everyone praised him for it. And because it didn't work, it just drives me nuts when we talk about things, successful or unsuccessful or the right decision or wrong decision based on the result. The process was right with Pat Shurmur, and I'll stand by him for that, even though his team's awful, which is even more of a case to go for it, because you don't want to go to overtime if you're the inferior team, because you don't think you can stop that opposing offense, and you don't think your offense can probably score again.
Yeah, I mean, if you know you have less talent than the other team, you want the game to end in as few possessions as possible. And what better way to do that than it's ending on this possession right now, no matter what. If we're going to score here and win, or we're not, and we're going to lose, but we think this is our best opportunity to win the game. And the math backs up Pat Shurmur. I don't think the play he called was probably the right play to call in that situation, but I will defend forever his decision to go for it there.
Yeah. And you can say the same thing about the Tennessee Titans going for two there at the end of the game to win the game against the Chargers in London. I love the call. Go for it. Yeah, you have the NFL 2-point conversion rate this season is 58% so far. I don't know if it's consistently going to be that high across the league, but even if it's around 50%, and as the Titans, come on, Mike Vrabel knows he's the inferior team to Phillip Rivers and the Chargers. Do you really want to go to overtime with that team? Do you think you're going to win that game? Or do you want to put it all on the line in one play? And I think he made the right choice to go for it. The play call was terrible.
Yeah, I mean, that was actually what I was... I don't know. I got them mixed up. I was thinking about the play the Titans ran, because I don't exactly understand what they were trying to do there. I still, after watching it like 5 or 6 times, I still couldn't figure out what the heck they were trying to do.
Yeah, they went 5 wide with a quarterback that struggles to throw the ball. And you don't have any particularly large receivers. I mean, Corey Davis is a really good receiver, but he was being locked down by Casey Hayward most of that game. Why not run a similar play that they did to score the touchdown on 4th and goal, where they ran a play action fake and Mariota threw it to the guy that was covered, even though the guy behind him was wide open. That's another funny thing if you watch the tape of that last touchdown. But I mean, you have a 250-pound running back that's pretty good in Derrick Henry. Why not line up, run some sort of run pass option, because you have a mobile quarterback, you have a 250-pound running back, they have to be concerned is just going to run straight through their defensive line. And then he can choose to either pull the ball out and run himself or throw the ball. Give yourself more options in a scenario like that instead of just spreading out five wide with not very good receivers and a not very good quarterback at throwing the ball. It didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, and the Titans are just doomed on two-point conversions. I mean, going back, the last time that the Titans were able to convert a two-point conversion was the beginning of 2015. So we got to go back quite a ways to find the Titans converting a two-point conversion. That's just, I guess, the luck of the Titans at this point. But that it is a that's seven times in a row they've gotten. How do you get, like, the chances of missing seven two-point conversions in a row are not really all that high. If you think about the conversion rate being somewhere around 50%.
Yeah, it's like a roulette wheel spitting out a black number seven times in a row. Highly unlikely. So, long story short is, trust the math, trust the analytics people, because it's going to work more times than it doesn't when they make the right decision.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I think there's more football coaches in the NFL start trusting the analytics people. Maybe we'll stop hearing these broadcasters saying the most ridiculous things on national TV, because like praising coaches for playing it safe. That's one of the things I hate about Doug Marrone, and not to get into Doug Marrone, but as a Bills coach, but Doug Marrone would punt from like the 35-yard line all the time. He'll still do it in Jacksonville. I mean, that dude loves to punt. But hopefully, as analytics become more and more prevalent in the game, more and more coaches start doing things like going for two in these situations because they realize the math backs them up.
Yeah, so I think that's a good place to wrap it up for this week, Nate. We always like to nerd out and talk about the math stuff. It's fun. I encourage you to look more into that stuff and not trust guys like John Gruden that go with their gut. And that's why the Raiders are terrible. But that'll bring us to an end of this episode of the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am your co-host, Alex Pounder.
And I am Nate Schreiber.
Subscribe. Download, give us 5 stars wherever you get your podcast so it can help others give it a listen. Do us a favor and share the podcast with one friend this week so we can continue growing. And you can follow us along on Twitter at @Bills_breakdown, Facebook at @Bills_breakdown. Thanks to Joe in Boston for the question this week. We really appreciated that. We like getting content from you guys and know what you're interested in hearing us talk about. So feel free to send any of those ideas to us at billsbreakdownpodcast@gmail.com. If we get more of those questions, we can kind of just roll through topics quickly. So we'd appreciate that. And thanks for listening.